Welcome, everyone, to another episode of What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. What's Working is the show designed to bring you the workplace, the workforce, and the marketplace trends shaping the workplace, the workforce, and the marketplace around us. We find the guests that can talk about the trends in such a way that what they say may help us get a little bit better at whatever it is that we do. You've probably noticed, if you're a regular listener, that I have a weak spot for the artists. I've interviewed a number of musicians and have a list of musicians I'd love to keep interviewing. I've interviewed different authors, and that's what we're going to do today. I had hoped to earn the right someday to invite this guy on the show, and instead I got an email saying, I think I've got some content that your listeners would be interested in. Watt Key is a Mobilian, grew up actually in Fairhope, I think, Point Clear area, has done wonderfully well for himself as an author. His first book was called Alabama Moon, and it later became a movie. He's going to talk to us about being an author, about the process of going into contract for books. He's going to talk to us about how you negotiate these types of things with the book publishers and the, and I was surprised to learn this, the extraordinary number of rights that go along with publishing a book. You've got foreign publishing rights. You've got softback cover rights. You've got almost an endless list of different rights that when a high quality publisher takes on a book, these are the rights that they're going to try to sell on the author's behalf in order to make the book most successful. One of those rights, of course, are the movie rights. And Alabama Moon was converted into a movie. So you reserve, somebody will reserve the movie rights and then take that option and turn it into a movie. And we're going to hear that story from Watt as well as what he plans to do upcoming in his career, as the world of an author has somewhat changed out there. And at the tail end of the show, we're going to keep the microphones on. And once this radio broadcast version ends, if you're interested in some of the stuff that is impacting him, that's less FCC approved, let's say, that's a little bit more nitty gritty, get the podcast version of this and keep it going. So when the radio version ends, the podcast version continues on, and Watt and I talk about some different things that I think you'll find interesting. You'll find it at whatsworkingcam.com, where you can listen to the whole show. Well, when you think about movie rights, you think, man, an infusion of cash, and that may or may not be the case, as we'll hear shortly. But when I think of infusion of cash, I think of the professionals at Sandifer Wealth Management. Mark Salyers and Jamie Sandifer have been helping people who have received a sudden infusion of cash make smart, good, long-term decisions with that cash. Whether it's selling movie rights, or your great aunt Tessie kicks the bucket, or you just received your 401k after many years at your organization, these big infusions of cash need to be used wisely. And that's where the professionals at Sandifer Wealth Management come in. Find them at Sandifer Wealth Management online. You can send them an email and they'll set up a call with you. You'll find them professional and a family feel. When we come back, I'll be with Watt Key in the studio. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston.
I'm Eric Cromwell. The law firm of Cromwell & Associates can help guide your decisions regarding the life you've created with estate planning tools like wills and trusts. We've planned meetings with first-generation business owners and large multi-generational family groups. With locations in Mobile and Fairhope, we can assist you and your family through every stage of life. To learn more, call 251-605-9075 or find Cromwell & Associates on Facebook.
At Spring Hill Toyota, it's just that easy. From our three-day exchange to free car washes, the benefits of the Spring Hill Advantage make the choice easy to see. We make it easy to own. Every vehicle comes with Toyota Care, plus our no-cost maintenance plan with free tire rotations and oil changes for 4 years. Get peace of mind with free roadside assistance 24/7. And don't forget, it's easy to buy your car 100% online. Visit springhilltoyota.com today. It's just that easy.
What's Working with Cam Marston is brought to you by Stella Artois Beer. now offering the purchase of the Stella Artois Chalice, a beautiful stemmed glass with the Stella logo. The purchase of each Stella Artois Chalice provides 5 years of clean water for someone in one of 13 developing countries around the world. Learn more at StellaArtois.com. Stella Artois. Find it wherever fine beer is sold.
A cool thing happened back in 64. That's when Keith Air Conditioning opened their doors.
In my family, turn to the experts is more than a tagline. It's a promise. Every Keith technician is an experienced AC professional, and that saves you money. Speaking of money, how about 0% financing for up to 60 months on installations of new Carrier systems? Keith and Carrier, turn to the experts.
Mobile's leading name in comfort since 1964.
License number 83731.
Back. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. I'm in the studio with a bad mamma jamma. Watt Key is across from me. Watt, prior to you getting here today, I counted up the awards that some of your books have won. You told me this may not be updated, and I've got 26 different awards with 15 won by Alabama Moon. Watt is a local publisher that's gone national, a local boy done good. Watt, thank you for your time. Welcome to What's Working.
Thank you for having me, Cam.
We'll start with a very broad question. It seems like one could suggest that people are reading fewer books these days. What I do read, though, is they're reading more due to social media. People are reading more. They're reading posts and pins and things like that. But what's the state of publishing today from your point of view? It's a very broad question, but let's jump in.
Well, I think that that publishing is alive and well. Certainly, in my market, my books have primarily hit middle schools, school reading list, and librarians are still pushing my books to students. They buy them in hardcover and paperback. And usually what will happen is the hardcover will come out and it will go into school libraries and public libraries. And it will not be on school reading list until the paperback comes out about a year later, because the schools don't want to require the kids to purchase a more expensive hardcover book. So I have been mostly in the world of traditional publishing, which means New York publishers, the bigger publishers. I have not had a lot of experience in the smaller presses. I've done a couple of books with university presses. Those seem to be alive and well. I feel like a lot more people are reading digital content these days. That's probably the biggest change I've seen, Kindle and that type of thing. I don't even think they do CD versions of my books anymore. I could be wrong, but I used to get big packs of CDs when they would do an audio version.
Yeah,
I don't think I've seen that on my last couple of books.
It's kind of hard to find a CD anywhere these days.
Right.
Sitting next to all the fax machines. One of the most famous one, am I correct in saying this, was Alabama Moon. And I want you to tell the story of that book quickly. Alabama Moon was released in 2006 and 2007 winner of the E.B. White Read Aloud Award for Older Readers. It was listed in Time magazine as one of the top 100 young adult books of all the time. However, you told me the other day it wasn't your first attempt at writing a book. Tell us the story of Alabama Moon.
That's right. So I started writing when I was about 10 years old. And I was obviously writing short stories and drawing pictures and making book covers. And I was always fascinated with the whole concept of making a book, the creation of the whole thing. And I started writing novels when I was a freshman in college. Those were my first novel length pieces that I did. And I began writing novels and sending them up to New York, and it was about a 15-year process. I would write about a novel about every year and a half, and you know, everyone I wrote, I thought was going to be the next big thing, the greatest American novel.
Yeah.
And you know, honestly, they were all amateur and they weren't very good, and thus I was getting rejection letters for 15 years. Finally, Alabama Moon was my 10th book. 10th novel that I had written. And I guess I had gotten good enough by that point, and that one hit. And fortunately, it hit with a a major publisher in New York, which was, I think, somewhat lucky because I had been shooting it to everybody. And it just so happened that a very big publisher was the one that asked for it first. And then I sort of the thing about going with one of these big publishers is that they've got a lot of credibility. And so when they publish a book, a lot of the bookstores will carry it. And so I was all of a sudden I was there. I was over the wall, as you might say.
Yeah.
And I was in all the bookstores, and I got had a lot of street cred from the publisher I was with, and I was on my way.
Did you feel like, wow, this is it? I'm beginning, or was that the culmination? Were you when the publisher called and said we want it? Did you say, all right, I'm getting my feet under me, this is awesome? Or was this the finish of the work that you had done? How did you see it?
Well, it all happened so fast, and it was confusing, and it wasn't quite as straightforward as, okay, we're ready to go. You know, they said it needed some work, and we had to work on it for a year or two. And they also bought two more of my previous books. And it was, I felt like I was getting started.
Yeah.
Like, I'm finally good enough. I've got my first book out. And then, you know, it was really hard to do my second book because I didn't know if I was going to be a one hit wonder. Because part of me in the back of my mind was thinking, maybe I just got lucky. You know, I wrote 9 other books that didn't work. What makes me think number 11 is going to work? Did I get lucky, or have I really arrived? So, fortunately, the next book I did, I decided not to publish the previous two they had bought from me because I just felt like they weren't good enough. So I ended up writing book 11, and fortunately it worked. So, I was able to keep it going.
Tell me about the genre that your books belong in.
Yeah. So Alabama Moon, interesting enough is, I did not write for young adults. I didn't know enough about the business to know that I should be targeting a particular audience. And so I just wrote Alabama Moon in the way that it was in my head, in the way that I usually tell stories. And most of the books I enjoyed were books I read in middle school. Where the Red Fern Grows, Tom Sawyer, things like that, Catcher in the Rye, which is a little bit older. But I think as a writer, I was trying to emulate books that hit at that level, not even consciously, but because those are the types of stories I enjoyed, and that's what I wanted to make. And so I was surprised when they told me Alabama Moon was going to be published as a young adult book. I wasn't disappointed. Heck, I would have done anything my goal was to see a book in the library. That had always been my goal. I thought, how hard can it be? You go in the library and you see all these books. How hard can it be just to be one of those?
Right.
And so I didn't really care if it was going to be a cookbook, an adult book, a young adult book, but honestly, that was what I was writing. And so there I was, set off on this young adult path, especially after Alabama Moon. It was pretty successful. And so that's what they wanted more of. And that's what I became, was the guy that writes those kinds of books.
Yeah. You've told me when we met for a beer last week that one of the great compliments is parents that come and share something with you about their boy.
Yeah. So my books are known as very successful with reluctant young male readers and boys that don't like to read, middle school boys primarily that have traditionally not enjoyed reading. My books seem to hit very well at that level. I'll sprinkle a few cuss words in there, and there's some survival stuff and things that they're attracted to. And I think my pacing lends itself to the attention span of those types of readers.
Yeah. And the parents say?
The parents I get thank you notes from the parents that say, you know, thank you so much. My kid never liked to read until he read your books. Now we've got them all and we love them.
You, the image in my head of a professional writer, a novelist, is he, let's do males because I don't know much about female authors. It's just not on my, he's overweight. He loves to drink. He loves to stay out late at night. He loves to carouse. It's almost the Hemingway attitude there. You're not that guy. You're buttoned up. You're disciplined. You go to meet the muse. You don't wait for the muse to find you. Tell me a little bit about the process of getting the writing down. And then when we come back from break, I want to talk a little bit about movie rights and pricing of books and things like that. But before we got a little bit of time before the break, how do you do your craft? How do you perform it?
Well, it certainly works to be like a Hemingway. And I find that a lot of those self-destructive type writers, though, obviously they destruct at some point. And for me, what works is I'm very disciplined about it. When I'm working on a project, I'm writing 2 hours a day, 5 days a week, same time, same place. There's no down at the Gulf with, the billowing white curtains and the smoke and the robe and the coffee walking around thinking of things. I sit down in my chair without a lot of scenery, same place, and I try to get out 500 words. Some days I'll get out 2,000. Some days it's a struggle to get to 500. But I find that you just have to treat it like a discipline. And it's a lot of people can't do that. But then I always compare it to people who like to get up in the morning at 5 and run 6 miles. They like that. They don't feel good about themselves unless they're doing it. And writing's the same way. It's just you make it part of your routine and you develop the discipline for it. And you have to like it enough to where you're going to, keep going until the marathon's done.
With Alabama Moon was turned into a movie. It was filmed. You said part in Louisiana. Was any of it filmed here in Alabama?
None of it was filmed in Alabama.
Part in Louisiana. And I want to hear the process when we come back from break of selling a book. I mean, this is a business show. People are wondering, how does the money work? We don't want to know your personal story, but what is the advance like? And how does that amount get determined? And if I were to buy a book for a dollar right now, how much of that dollar goes to you? If I were to download a book on a Kindle for a dollar right now, how much of that Kindle book goes from you? Is it pricing revenue different from you on Amazon versus Page and Palette over in Fairhope? When we come back from break, let's look at the numbers from what you'll be willing to tell us.
Sounds good.
You're listening to What's Working in the studio today with Watt Key, a local boy done very good. And perhaps, frankly, one of the highlights of this show thus far is to be here with him. I've been a fan for a long time. We'll be right back.
I'm Paul Lewis, General Manager of Roy Lewis Construction. Many of our commercial buildings you drive by daily on both sides of the bay are the fruits of our client relationships since our beginning in the early 80s. It is our mission to bring value to our clients, from retrofits to ground-up construction and everything in between. We have more advocates than any of our competitors who have been in business twice as long. Same with repeat business, same with referrals. Find us online at roylewisconstruction.com and let's talk about your next commercial project.
Hi, I'm David Nelson, brewmaster and owner of Braided River Brewing in downtown Mobile. We make drinkable, flavorful craft beer perfect for life on the Gulf Coast. So pick up one of our six packs before your next adventure or stop by our tap room for a relaxing afternoon with friends. Follow us on social media for the latest beer releases and events and ask for a Braided River at your favorite bars and restaurants. Thanks for your support. We look forward to sharing our beers with you.
This is Cam Marston, and I'm with Cajun Mike of E3 Termite and Pest Control. Cajun Mike, if a homeowner thinks they have termites, do you offer inspections? What about someone buying a new home? Can you come in and take a look and see if there are termites in their new home?
Yeah, basically what we would do on a home above and beyond anyone else is we actually do a thorough inspection. But above that, we will use infrared imaging that will allow us to see problems in the wall. And at times can tell us if there's anything going on.
That's fantastic, Cajun Mike. How can people find you?
They can find me at e3pest.com.
That's the letter E, the number 3, pest.com.
King Solomon wrote, "Without consultation, plans are frustrated. But with many counselors, they succeed." The law firm of Cromwell & Associates has the legal counsel that can help your business succeed with experience in LLCs, corporations, and tax. I'm Eric Cromwell. Our law firm has locations in Mobile and Fairhope. Call 251-605-9075 or search for Cromwell & Associates on Facebook, and let's discuss how we can help you.
You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston. I'm in the studio today with Watt Key, a local boy done good. I know I've said that a lot, but it's just nice to see people from around here that have hit such a stride nationally and love what they do and are bringing respect and honor and character to our part of the world. Watt, prior to the break, we were talking a little bit about the finances. Take me through. Now, you've got so many books now that the routine must seem just so familiar to you. However, my listeners and I don't know the process. Take me through what happens when a publisher says, we are interested in your book, and contracts, and, you know, maybe not the minutiae, but generally, how does it work?
Sure. So in the old days, you used to be able to send books directly to publishers, and that's called over the transom submitting. In the last, since I've been in the business, that has really not been the way to do it. You typically now you will get an agent in New York. It doesn't have to be in New York, but that's where the good ones are, because they're going down the street and eating lunch with the editors, and they're all in the same place. So you want to get a New York agent. And that's really the hard part. Once you get an agent, then you're pretty far along, because an agent's not going to work with you unless they think they can make money off of
you. So are you sending books to agents?
You send the books to agents.
Okay.
So Alabama Moon, originally I got an agent for that book. And once I had an agent, they actually took it to the publishers to sell it. And your agent will take 15% of whatever contracts they negotiate. Because when you have a book, there are a lot of different rights that go with that book. There's hardback, there's paperback, there's audio, there's ebook, there's merchandising, there's movie, there's theatrical. I'm not even naming half of them.
Really?
So you have an agent who will parse out those rights to different people. And that agent will sell, for instance, the first thing that sells when I send a book to my agent are the hardback and the paperback and the audio, and typically foreign rights. And sometimes we'll hold the foreign rights, but most of the time we will sell those to the publisher also. And each of those carries its own price. It's a la carte. Typically, a first-time publisher, you will get an advance. And that advance can be $5,000 and up. I think my advance for Alabama Moon was about $20,000, if I can remember. It's been a long time ago.
Sure.
And the more established you get, the more your advance goes up from there.
And it's called an advance. It's not
correct.
Called a payment. It's an advance.
That's right.
And it means what?
It means we're going to give you, they will give you half of the advance, $10,000. And they're like, all right, we want your book. You're going to work on it with us. And when we're finished, we're going to give you the other 10. So you spend, in my case, I spent about 2 years working with an editor. I had my $10,000. I got a check. Agent took 15%. And I spent a couple of years working with the editor on Alabama Moon. One day they said, it's ready to go. Here's $10,000 more. Now I've got my $20,000 advance. From that point, they're going to keep my royalties until they've made back that $20,000. And then I start getting the royalties. And the royalties are not quite as simple as I'll describe it, but basically you can think of it as 10% of the cover price. That's pretty close to what it is. And there's, you know, if you win certain awards, they'll give you bonuses. And the paperback royalty may be 8.5%. But when you see a book sell, a Watt Key book sell in Page and Palette, I'm basically getting 10% of that cover price, assuming I've made back my advance.
And made back your advance. So Page and Palette, it's 10%. Amazon, it's 10%. What about, have any idea if someone downloads your book, what do you get from that?
Honestly, I don't have any idea what that is.
Yeah.
The accounting is changing with that, and I only get royalty statements every 6 months.
Yeah.
And to be honest with you, with my books mostly being in schools, the majority of my royalties are coming from paperback sales, hardback and paperback sales, because kids aren't as likely to be reading a Kindle or an ebook as an adult would be. And so I'm still making most of my royalties from.
Is it seasonal? So my kids are getting their gear to go back to school. We've got a pile of books on the dining room table that they've had to buy for their summer reading list, or actually the reading list that will go into the fall. Are you a seasonal author, meaning will you see a royalty check in, that comes in the next 6 months that will be significantly different than the one that comes 6 months later?
So, yes, everybody gets their royalty checks the same. I get my royalty check, I think it's October and April.
Yeah.
But you will notice that almost all of my books will either come out in September or January. And that's they come out in September so that they can get on school programs. And then also they'll come out in January so that teachers can start evaluating them for summer reading programs.
Have you been asked to describe the books or to get involved in the sale of the books to teachers through a video conference, to a speech at a book fair or anything like that?
The publisher will not usually ask me to participate. Sometimes they will have me come up to like book expo events. But when it comes to schools, usually the schools, a big part of my business model is speaking at schools. And so the schools will typically reach out to me. For instance, I was just recently in Missouri for two schools, and they had, I don't remember which book it was, but one of my books had been part of their reading program. And so they invite me to come up for author day or whatever they're calling it. And I show up and they will pay me to come speak and sign books.
Yeah.
So
do you enjoy that?
I do. I like it a lot because you spend so much time on your own doing these things sort of, you know, in your space and staying to yourself. You don't, it's not a very social activity as you can imagine. So it's nice to pop out and show up somewhere where, you know, a lot of these places I go, these kids, they don't know the difference between me and Elvis. And so they're so happy to see you and talk about the book. And it's nice to get that sort of feedback.
Right. So I've heard Malcolm Gladwell interviewed. I've heard Michael Lewis interviewed. And they won't talk about books that they've already written. They'll only talk about what they're working on. They're very, you know, I love both of these authors, both nonfiction authors, both great thinkers. But they're really, they won't talk about past books. Mm-hmm. Do you get tired of talking about Alabama Moon?
Not at all. Every day I'm still happy that somebody found it.
Yeah.
I don't have, a lot of authors have hangups about stuff like that. I have one. The only one I have is I don't like to talk about a book that I'm writing.
Oh, really? So they're the absolute opposite from you, these two authors that I just mentioned.
Yeah. And the thing that happens to me is when I talk about a book I'm writing and it's not finished, when I go back to work on it again, I end up thinking about what I told somebody it was going to be about. And I feel like that sort of steers me in directions that I might not have otherwise gone.
Yeah.
And you want to leave it open to, it sounds really corny, but you want a really good book. Your characters will be doing what they want to do after a while.
Yeah.
You'll be in their head and you're sort of just, you know, following them along and writing what they're doing. I know it sounds really hokey, but it sort of ends up working like that.
So many questions. So what is a character? Name one character in a book that you absolutely admire the way the author developed that character and you felt like that character ended up doing what he was supposed to do.
Well, I think Scout in To Kill a Mockingbird is a really good example.
You know, it's interesting that you choose that because I've read criticisms of To Kill a Mockingbird that say it's a children's book that adults have found.
Well, I mean, so's Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn. And
yeah.
I mean, back when Mark Twain and Harper Lee were writing books, they weren't thinking about who it was for. They were just writing the book.
So Scout is a character that you like the development of the way Harper Lee did that. Did you ever meet her?
I did not.
What about any others come to mind? It's a surprise question, I know.
There's a book I really like that I somewhat base some of Alabama Moon off of called The Education of Little Tree.
I know that one. That was written by a Native American.
Well, actually, it was not.
Oh, that's the controversy, isn't it?
That's right.
Tell me about that. We've got just a minute.
So the guy that wrote Education of Little Tree also wrote Outlaw Josie Wales, mm-hmm. which you'll know that movie. Clint Eastwood optioned it and made it into a movie. Well, he wrote this Education of Little Tree, and he wrote all of these claiming that he was a Native American.
Yeah.
And he was in all the, you know, Native American bookstores. He was their celebrated author. And they find out that it's George Wallace's speechwriter.
Oh, no kidding.
Who was a drunk and had, after he was out of favor with the George Wallace crowd, he went off and disappeared, went off to Texas, and locked himself in a room and started putting out these books like he was a Native American. And he was a great writer. But they found that out, and then they banned his books. And
but he was a fiction through and through in his life and his writings and everything.
That's right.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
I did not know that. I remember that controversy, but I don't remember that story. So that's interesting that the character will do what they're supposed to do. And you as the author, you as the God figure, don't have a hand in it, essentially. I mean, that's silly to say, but.
Well, lots of times books will be a struggle and you'll be pushing them along. You'll be writing your characters and you'll be making them do things. But the characters that really start to work, they have a life of their own.
Name a character from one of your books that you're really close to.
Well, Moon in Alabama Moon. Hal is probably my favorite character from Dirt Road Home and Alabama Moon. Those two. And, you know, I hate to say it, but the more I do this, there are certain things with publishing now. When I was writing my first two books, I pretty much did what I wanted and they liked it. And as I got to be more established, there were certain things that they would want me to do. Put a girl in here. I don't know if we can say this. And I started having more and more restrictions. And I think part of that was because I was writing at a high level. A lot of people were reading these books and we didn't want to take a lot of chances with things. We got a good thing. Let's don't mess it up. All we got to do is take this one word out of here. I know that's what the character would have said, but you know, let's keep things going.
You've been manacled. You've been shackled by the culture. And that's something, folks, that we're going to talk about. And I'll tell you more about how we're going to talk about that when we get back from break. And I also want to hear what the transition to movie rights looks like and how that works. And then whatever else comes up. You're listening to What's Working. I'm Cam Marston, touching heaven right now. We'll be right back.
At Roy Lewis Construction, we're in the business of adding value. Whether it's working with you to meet your unique business needs or making investments in our community in lasting ways, providing unparalleled value and quality in every commercial construction project. When planning your next commercial project, reach out to Roy Lewis Construction. We'll pair you with a designer that best suits your project needs and work with that designer to balance the best architectural outcome with the best budget outcome. Find us online at roylewisconstruction.com. Building legacies, one relationship at a time.
At Spring Hill Toyota, it's just that easy. From our three-day exchange to free car washes, the benefits of the Spring Hill Advantage make the choice easy to see. We make it easy to own. Every vehicle comes with Toyota Care, plus our no-cost maintenance plan with free tire rotations and oil changes for 4 years. Get peace of mind with free roadside assistance 24/7. And don't forget, it's easy to buy your car 100% online. Visit springhilltoyota.com today. It's just that easy.
Think about how people really see you. The kid at the drive-thru just sees a coffee drinker.
Please pull forward.
Your local barista sees the person who loves a smiley face in their latte.
See you next time.
It's kind of the same way with insurance. Other insurance companies just see a customer, but a State Farm agent sees more. They see you as a neighbor. Your State Farm agent is here to get to know who you really are so they can help life go right.
Call me, State Farm agent Allison Horner in Mobile at 666-1616.
I'm David Nelson, brewmaster and owner of Braided River Brewing. We want beer that goes along no matter where the adventure takes us and that doesn't make us choose between great beer and drinkability. We're drawn to the Delta and united by beer because to us, the best way to celebrate the Delta is to slow down and savor the moments and the beer together. Come visit our tap room in downtown Mobile and ask for us at your favorite bar or restaurant. Visit online at braidedriverbrewing.com.
Watt Key is a celebrated author from Mobile, Alabama. He does it full time. He doesn't dabble in it. He doesn't wonder if he can write the great American novel. The guy's done it, and he's making a living doing it. And one of the guests that I've hoped to have on this show, when I felt like I'd earned the right to ask him, and here he is, and here I am. Watt, prior to the break, I wanted to talk a little bit about It is a business-oriented show, and there's always a lot of curiosity around this. When people say someone have sold the movie rights to the book, to me, that means cha-ching. Am I right?
For the most part, yeah. It's the money is much better, and the from my experience, you know, in the movie business. And the way it works is, so you have your agent, somebody somewhere reads your book and they say, we think we want to make a movie out of this book. So they'll call my agent, and that's one of those rights that, they can sell to somebody that we didn't already sell to a publisher. Typically, at least in my case, I have always held back the movie rights. A lot of publishers will just say, we want all the rights to this, but I typically only sell them a few of the rights. So they call my agent. We're interested in the movie rights. Are they available? In this, in the case of Alabama Moon, they were. And so you sell this person an option, a movie option, which means, and that's usually anywhere from $5,000 to $10,000. And they get a year or two to try to raise money for that movie. And so in most cases, a lot of books get optioned for movies. They get tied up so that other people don't make them.
So $5,000 and $10,000 is not a great dollar amount to hold the movie rights. I would expect to hear several hundred thousand dollars, but that's kind of a movie company saying, we want to put our finger on this.
Correct.
While we examine this.
Yes. And most reasonably established writers will be getting their books optioned. And so you're right. It's not a great amount of money, but it's something. And you hope that they will exercise that option at some point. So in the case of Alabama Moon, a year goes by and they say, we're ready to pull the trigger on this. And so when pull the trigger means we want to purchase the movie rights at this point. And typically that, again, I'm giving you a general number, but that is usually about 2.5% of the movie budget. The movie business is different in a lot of ways, but one way is they know exactly what they're going to spend on that movie in the beginning. And you hear stories about things going way over budget, but most movies, they know we're going to spend $20 million on this movie. And the investors actually get bonds that say protect them from the expenses going over that. And so since they know that figure, they can pay you 2.5% of that amount up front. And they also promise you a certain percentage of what they call the back end, which are, you know, a percentage of the proceeds of the movie, what the movie makes. And they will typically, it's usually something like 5% of the net revenue.
Mm-hmm.
And in the movie business, there's never any net revenue.
Net revenue can be clouded wherever
That's right.
you go. Yeah. In the movie business, it sounds like they're expert at making sure the movie never makes money.
That's right. So you want to make sure you're happy with the money you get up front, because that is all you're going to see.
So you've cited percentages that are typical of the industry.
Yeah.
How much wiggle room is there? Can you go to that movie agent or producer, whoever it may be, and say, yeah, I know 2.5% is normal. I want 3%.
Yeah. If you're John Grisham or Stephen King or somebody like that, you know, I'm no John Grisham, so I pretty much fall into the standard deal category.
Yeah.
Which I'm thrilled with the standard deal. But, you know, I think I told you the story about talking to my lawyers up in New York, and I was asking them things like, well, can we do this? Can we do this? And they finally just said, look, what, you need to be, are you happy with your money? And I said, yeah. They're like, well, then that's what it's going to be.
And what you told me in that when we were having a beer is they'll just kill the deal.
They'll just kill the deal.
If you become a problem, they'll say, there's a ton of books out there. Why?
Yeah.
We're going to go find a different one.
Yeah. And, you know, you run the risk of that happening to you.
Yeah.
For sure.
So the movie rights, it comes into a movie. What was it like sitting there watching that movie?
Well, I had friends who had had their books made into movies, and I had been talking to them, and they all were telling me, just take your money and be happy, because you're going to hate what they do. And so I was somewhat prepared to not like and you know, the movie is never as good as the book.
No.
And so I was prepared, and I thought that I was healthily prepared to go through all of this. I had my money. I knew I was expecting not to like the movie. Well, then they didn't like the screenplay. This guy in L.A. had written a screenplay, and they didn't like it. And so they came back to me and asked me to write the screenplay for the movie. And so I was pulled into it at a level that most writers are not. So I wrote the screenplay and gave that to the director, and that's what they shot the movie with. Of course, I had already had the first version, so I had seen what all they had pulled out. So I didn't really have to do any of the butchering on the book. I just took what that guy had done and made it more authentic, adjusted the accents and added a few things here and there. But I really didn't have to go through the destructive process of, we could have a whole nother show on why the movie isn't as good as the book. But basically, you don't have enough time to put everything in the book. And a book has so many more plots and characters and sub themes and subplots that you get a richer experience out of it. With a movie, you have to pick one thing that the book is about and you have to cram it into a very structured story arc. And you have to put it all in 90 pages. Every page is a minute of screen time, so that makes an hour and a half. And so you can imagine taking a novel that you've been able to just do whatever you want in and put it into a 90-page. Each page is a minute. You have certain things have to happen by this page. It's completely structured, and you've got to put your book into that formula. And that's why you come out of a movie thinking, that really, I didn't get the same feeling, because you don't.
You're mangling a child doing that. Did you enjoy that challenge or was it torture?
You know, I was so young that and so excited about just being involved that they were paying me to do this. And I thought my mindset was they've hired me to do a job. I have to remove myself from the parent of this project. And I need to do for them whatever they think is going to make money, because it's a business. And if I do it that way, maybe they'll ask me to do it again. And so I did exactly what they asked me to do. I studied what is a screenplay supposed to do.
Yeah.
And that's what I did.
Yeah. Would you do it again? I mean, now that you're where you are in your career, if they came back to you and said, we want the movie rights and we want you to write the screenplay to it, would you accept that job, or you say, no, that's somebody else's job now?
I probably would, but I'll be the first to tell you that I might not be the best person to do it. And I would only write screenplays for my material. I'm just not a screenwriter. It's a different art.
Yeah.
You know, I'm a novelist. That's what I do. I would be happy if somebody wanted to hire me to write a screenplay for one of my books, but I'm not sure that would be in the best interest of everybody. I think you need to get a professional.
What we're going to do, I want to hear what's next from you. And folks, let you know, the show's going to kind of evolve if you're a regular listener. And what that means is so many of the conversations that I have with my guests, once the microphones are off, there's some remarkable content that comes out. So we're going to wrap the show up here, Watt and me, in a moment, but leave the microphones on. And we're going to talk about more detail about your future, Watt, what you and I discussed over that beer a little bit. As well as, you're going to be surprised about this, the cancel culture and how it has had to, what is having to react to that. And there's some stories here that infuriated me, and I think you'll feel the same. So you'll hear this on the podcast. And if you want to go from this broadcast to the podcast, go to whatsworkingcam.com. Again, whatsworkingcam.com, or look for What's Working with Cam Marston on any of her favorite podcast apps. And you'll be able to hear the tail end of this interview after the radio portion ceases and he and I continue to talk. But in the time left remaining for the radio show, what's next? What's your future? What's the next book? What's your heart getting into these days? Where do you see this passion of yours going?
Well, I've been wanting to write horror stories for a while. And so I think I'm about to embark on several books of horror set in the South. And, you know, no matter how adult I try to make them, they always seem to land to a general audience. But I think that I'm going to be, you know, maybe peppering in a few more bad words and maybe turning it up a notch and having more adult characters in these, which would normally curse a little more than kids would. But nothing too heavy. And that's, I think that's where I'm going next.
Yeah. When someone says to your children, what does your dad do? What do they say?
Well, they, I mean, it depends, you know, I also own a software company. And so sometimes they'll say, you know, he has a software company, and they don't seem to think the writing is as big a deal as their friends sometimes do. Like a lot of times, for instance, my daughter came home one day and she had a copy of one of my books, and she said, "Dad, look what I found in the library." And like, it was a big find. And I said, you know, well, we've got like 15 of these around the house. Why didn't you leave that for somebody else? And another time we were in Barnes and Noble one day, and a lot of people don't know it, but Barnes and Noble, they don't carry many copies of any book.
Yeah.
They'll carry about 5 is about the max they'll stock. And so we were walking around in Barnes and Noble, and I used to go see, you know, how many of my books they had. And my daughter, she found a copy of Alabama Moon, and she said, "Dad, look what I found." And there was only one left, when the reality was they probably only stocked one.
They had the one. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
So, you know, we keep it pretty toned down around the house, and they make as big a deal about it as they want to, which is usually not a big deal.
It's always a fun question. What do your children think that you do? You know, because they see it through jaded eyes, and they see you at, you know, whatever, early in the morning when you're getting your coffee and you're not all put together, you're not ready to show your game face to the world. So I'm unsure what my children would say I do. They're just unclear. And it's very funny. I told you I've got 4 books that I've written, all nonfiction. Hadn't written one in a while, but I checked mine out at the Library of Congress one day. And it was the coolest thing in the world to have that woman in Washington, D.C. bring me a copy of my book.
Yeah.
And I immediately held it below the table and signed it. I defaced the book, government property with my signature, and I just handed it right back and walked out.
Well, and, you know, the whole signing of books is interesting. Back to, you know, a lot of authors will not sign paperback books.
Oh, really?
And like, I'll sign anything.
Yeah.
I'm so happy to have somebody want me to sign a book still to this day that I don't care what it is. I'll sign a piece of paper. You know, if somebody wants my signature, I mean, who am I to, I mean, I guess, I don't know. I'm flattered that they would want it. So I have no hangups about signing things.
Many people say, "Cam, thanks for the signature. Without it, we could have sold the book on eBay this afternoon for $10. Now that you've signed it, we got to sell it for $2. I'm like, "Oh, thank you for that." Yeah. Watt Key in the studio with me, local boy done good. We are going to continue the conversation for the radio. I'll come back with final comments, but Watt and I are going to talk about the cancel culture and what it's done to his writing. You're listening to What's Working. Watt, thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Cam.
We'll be right back after this break with final comments. Hi, I'm Cam Marston, host of What's Working. My Carrier Infinity system is quiet, energy efficient, and runs like a dream. To keep it running smoothly, I rely on a maintenance plan from Keith Air Conditioning. With a Keith maintenance plan, your home or business receives discounts and 24/7 priority service. Give Keith Air Conditioning a call today at 251-476-3610 or visit keithair.com. Keith and Carrier, turn to the experts.
What's Working with Cam Marston is brought to you by Stella Artois Beer. Stella Artois is a perfect beer for celebration. Nothing caps off a big sale, hitting your incentive goals, or a profitable quarter like a round of Stella's. Brewed first in 1708 as a special Christmas brew, today Stella is a gift for everyone to enjoy year-round. Stella Artois. Find it wherever fine beer is sold.
This is Cam Marston with Cajun Mike of E3 Termite and Pest Control. Cajun Mike, houses on pilings can have termites eat their way up inside the piling and enter the house. The homeowner never knows about it, but your company offers protection. Tell me about that.
Yeah, Cam. Basically, what we have designed is a program, and what we do is we will actually drill to the center of the piling and put a product in the center that will stop the termites from coming up into the home.
Stucco exteriors as well?
Correct.
How can people find you, Cajun Mike?
they can find me at e3pest.com.
That's the letter E, the number 3, pest.com.
When you make the right decision, it feels good, like picking the perfect accent rug or choosing a good night's sleep over an all-night crime show binge. It feels really good to make the right insurance decision, too. I'm State Farm agent Allison Horner, and that's why I'm right here in Mobile to help you select the right protection at the right price. I'll make sure you understand your State Farm coverages so you'll know what to expect if the unexpected happens. With me as your State Farm agent, it's easy to make the right choice. You can come by, call, or click AllisonHorner.com. When you want the real deal, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
This is Jay Stubbs with Concourse Financial, and when I'm not working on an insurance plan with a financial advisor, I'm listening to What's Working with Cam Marston. Now back to the show.
Special thanks to Watt Key for giving me so much time. Maybe you heard my breathlessness when I was in there with him, but he's been kind of a celebrity figure of mine for a while, and like I said in the opening comments, I love the artists. I think they're interesting. I think, and there have been poets and philosophers who say it much better than I can, but the artists reflect a society's soul back to itself. And when you meet these people who have taken on that role, you want to know them. What makes them tick? Well, this is a nice guy. You'd like him. Watt is a nice guy. You'd like him. You want to sit down with him. You want to hear his stories. And when you know there's a guy in front of you who makes a living telling stories, you really want to cue him up for some good stories. And that's what I was able to do when we had a beer last week, as well as in the studio today. And he shows the discipline of what you want in a successful person. Success has come to him through work and practice and patience. And he's done well, and you feel good for him for that reason. And I just love it. Don't forget, you can hear the extended version at the podcast, whatsworkingcam.com. You'll find all the podcasts. I know you're tired of hearing me say that, but he and I get into some stuff that's pretty interesting about the cancel culture and how it's impacted his writing. It's not something that would make us, proud, frankly, but he's reacted to it in a very creative way, and I'm very encouraged for him. The show, by the way, we're going to have, speaking of writers, be on the lookout for this. I'm not sure when it will air. But as a guy who tries to write myself, Watt, Rob Holbert of Lanyap Magazine, and I are getting together. Each of us are going to write 500 words on our oldest child leaving for college. And that's something that I'm going through in my household right now. And we're going to read our 500-word commentaries on the air and then talk about our process of writing. Now, let me be clear. I am not of equal talent to Watt or Rob. I love to try this, and I'm going to love this conversation. So keep an ear out for that. If you've got to write for your work, for your business, if you have a fancy of creative writing or nonfiction is your work you do, tune in. Maybe there'll be something one of us say that will be helpful to you. That's upcoming. Find us on social media, folks. If you can think of it on social media, we're probably out there. Even TikTok, which is not something I'm really good at or proud of, but we're out there. Instagram, Facebook is where we spend most of the time trying to keep you updated on what we do. John Thompson with Eye on Digital, EYEON Digital, is the show's producer. And every time I say that, it means he was unable to spend a day on Horn Island drinking beer. Good for me, bad for him. We'll have another show next week, everybody. Have a good week.